Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law. I hope my sound is doing okay today. Let me know in the chat room if you're hearing okay. Today is June 28th, 2012, nearing the end of the month, and it's been a hot summer and a lot of weather out there. Thanks for listening to these free, informative broadcasts. You can be part of this educational movement. Simply tell your friends to listen to the show. Send them an email with a link, tweet it on Twitter, post the share button on Facebook, Dig, StumbleUpon, Reddit, MySpace, or copy the embed code for the show into your website or blog. How about favoriting the show and become a regular listener? Get the reminder button. We're so excited to be here today. There is always news about vaccines and how it affects and impacts individuals and groups of people who are sensitive to them. We are pleased to have Alan Phillips, attorney at law from North Carolina, who is a leading vaccine rights attorney, and he advises individuals, folks who are immigrating into the United States, families, other attorneys. He's a speaker all around the country, and he also is an advocate for freedom of choice. So welcome, Alan.
Thank you, Debbie. Pleasure to be here as always.
We have lots and lots to talk about today, so we're going to just ahead and talk about everything that's being ignited around the world here.
we're going to solve the world's problems in the next hour, or at least some small part of them that we can get to, because it seems there's just always more going on. No, I said
I didn't say solve. I said talk about.
I know. I threw that in there because, you know, really that's our end goal, that we joke about it. But our end goal, of course, is to bring awareness of the problems and issues to ourselves and our listeners, but to discuss things that we can do about them. It's certainly a critical prerequisite to be aware of problems in the world today, but awareness in and of itself often doesn't cause or create a change. And so the obvious next question, once you become aware of a problem, is what can you do about it? And that's something we try to talk about a lot here on Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community. And we do welcome the participation, the active participation of our listeners. Debbie has the people can type in or potentially can call in. If you want to take a brief moment, Debbie, and tell people
how
they can
like
do
me
that.
To do?
Explain how people can participate actively, because we want to be here not just to have a one-way communication between us and the air, which we're happy to do, but we're also happy to interact with people in these live shows. If you have questions or concerns or issues that we may be able to help with, or if you just want to share your views and interpretations.
You're asking me to let folks know that we have a live chat where people can, as they're listening to the show, they can ask questions, they can comment, they can even call into the show by calling 347-945-6956, and that's the guest call-in number, so call that number and we will answer the line. You can share this information by taking the URL at the top of the page if you're listening now and tweet it on Twitter, copy it or or there's a button to click. And this is something that we would like people to know about, to be active in the social networking community by spreading the information about. Don't keep it to yourself. Let other people know what you're learning. And, you know, if you're upset by what you're learning, it's only going to kind of stifle you if you don't speak out and work with other people. There's the NVIC. There are a lot of organizations that you can get involved with. Is that what you're asking me to talk about? Are you there?
Excuse me, I had accidentally had a button off there. Can you hear me now?
Yes. I'm getting lots of clicks on my line today, so if anybody else is having that, hearing it, I might sign out and sign in again to clear my line.
Okay, well, a little bit of that was me changing to a headset here, so let's see if it continues, and if so, maybe it's something else. Well, let's go ahead and dive in.
Okay, I just lost your sound. Okay, you're lost.
You can't hear me?
No, it's kind of gone. So.
All right. How about now?
That's better.
All right. I will.
Okay, so let's. Are we going to talk about the smoking issue to start?
Yeah, I saw three recent articles just in the last few days talking about new vaccines. Now, historically, we think about vaccines as something to prevent infectious disease, but I had a figure that was actually about 2 years old at this point. Debbie, I believe it was from the North Carolina biotech industry page, but in any event, the source was saying that there were over 330 vaccines either already on the market or in development. And it's not that I think that there aren't 330 potentially infectious disease agents on the planet. There probably are millions. But it just seemed really odd to me. We certainly don't have a list of 330 diseases that are current, active, significant problems in the U.S. or even the world that I'm aware of. And so, of course, the question arises, well, what are all these vaccines that are being developed for? And they are being developed for just about anything you can think of and then a few more things beyond that. So here's this first article, Debbie, that you referred to. This comes from, I think this was Yahoo News. By the way, when we talk about articles here on Homeopathy World Community, the Vaccines in Your Right show, we're most often referring to articles that are linked on the Pandemic Response Project's news page. That's pandemicresponseproject.com, all those words spelled out. And I believe that's mostly what we'll be talking about today. So there's an article from Yahoo News talking about a vaccine that would help people quit smoking. And as I was looking at the title, I'm saying, how could a vaccine have anything to do with smoking? Aren't vaccines about viruses and bacteria? Sure enough, the strategy here is to use a vaccine that will create anti-nicotine antibodies. So, indeed, falling clearly in that regard, at least within the general definition of vaccines, even though smoking is not an infectious disease we're trying to prevent in the more conventional sense and use of vaccines. So there's just this amazing creativity out there about, gee, what can we use vaccines to do? We found a way to alter the immune system, and what kind of results can we get? We'll talk about that today. But one of the possibilities here is to help people quit smoking.
Yeah, so I think that the direction of supposedly preventative medicine and healthcare, the whoever is in control or making decisions is telling us that we're not getting good enough results with use of antibiotics after the fact, after somebody's sick, or even as prophylactic usage of antibiotics because bugs have become resistant. So now we're going to attempt to go into the genetic makeup once they've gotten that technology. How can they use it? And I have a bunch of red flags that are waving violently as I read this article. So when we get to them, I'll let you know.
Oh, well, if you want to talk about some right now, feel free. I mean, you and me both. Let me talk just real briefly what the article says about what's really going on here. The basic idea, if I understand it correctly here from the article, is that this is something that, I mean, they do suggest in the article that hypothetically this might be something you would give children so that they never get addicted to nicotine in the first place. But really what they're focusing on, at least at this point, is using it as a way to help people quit smoking. And what they do is, in theory, this vaccine would prevent the brain, the nicotine from getting to the brain and someone getting then the pleasure or satisfaction response that comes from a cigarette once you're addicted to nicotine. And that just says to me, wait a second, you've got something here, the purpose of which is to basically intervene in that addiction process, and that sounds good on the surface, but if you're telling somebody who is addicted, or if you keep the addicted person from getting what they're addicted to, you better have that person's full commitment and cooperation, or they're going to go through some serious withdrawal in that process. And I've known smokers who tried to quit, and it didn't work the first time, and they went back to smoking again, and they had to sort of ramp up to it. Now, there are people who just make the commitment, quit cold turkey, and go, and more power to them if they can do that. But I'm just concerned about sort of the psychological fallout here. Somebody makes the commitment, but then psychologically they're not able to follow through, but physically they're not given a choice once they take this vaccine. And is that really a safe way to even approach the addiction in the first place? But what are your red flags, Debbie?
Bunches. So, like, one thing that you just said is cooperation, getting the cooperation and approval of the individual. I mean, hopefully this is not going to be something that's going to be imposed on anyone. That's one thing. Also, this announcement is still in a very beginning stage of experimentation. They've only tested on mice. We are not mice. And now they say they're going to have to do it in human trials. You know, things like that could take 10 years down the line. So they're very hopeful, but in 10 years down the line, or even if they push it through in a year or so, they do not know the ramifications of what happens when they, and I'm going to quote here, where my red flag is, the new vaccine, quote, contains a harmless virus that has been engineered. Well, I pardon my skepticism, but what virus do you know is harmless that has been engineered? Then the second half of the same sentence, they will carry the genetic information to make anti-nicotine antibodies. Well, they tried one way of doing it that didn't work with the antibodies. They had to keep giving it over and over as an antibiotic. So now they're trying to go even deeper into the makeup of the human anatomy, into the genes. And I really question, you know, it reminds me of a Twilight Zone movie that I saw where they did do this, where, you know, everybody, all the women wanted to be beautiful, and they just had, when they were young at certain age, they picked which face they would each have and which body they would each have, and everybody would look the same, and then nobody was really an individual. Well, I don't buy this, because a virus can change, and our human genetic makeup is the way it is for a reason. I don't really believe in playing around that with it. Let me see. There was some more stuff in here. The virus selectively infects liver cells, which then start to make a steady stream of the antibodies. Well, what else do we know is happening in the liver? What else is it going to affect? And we may not know for 10, 20, or 30 years down the line what other kind of diseases it's going to impose on the people who get this virus, vaccine.
Yeah, let me clarify that liver point, because it's a real important one, because the article says that previous attempts to create a vaccine, that the effectiveness wore off and they had to keep repeatedly administering the vaccine, and that would make it just impractical, not cost-effective in marketing terms. And so this particular version goes a step further, and it turns the liver into an antibody factory so that they don't have to keep giving the shot over and over again in order to keep the antibodies up. Well, whoa, you know, talk about red flags. I mean, is that something you can turn off once you turn on? And, of course,
that's
if you're using the liver for something that it's not designed to do, that's going to have all kinds of implications in terms of, you know, there are few, if any, medical procedures that don't have some kind of side effects. And so, of course, thank God they have the sense to realize that this is something, you know, that they're early in developmental stages here. And if this ever is something that comes to market, it'll be hopefully years down the road. But more lots of questions here to ask, lots of things to research, lots of things to look into.
Before it goes on the market, and that it
right.
it will be completely safe. It will, if it's given to children before they tempt a cigarette. Well, you know, hello, what do you think?
Right,
we're going to give it to on top of the 60 other vaccines that they get.
Right, and this is you know, probably the biggest red flag of all is that with all of the yet not fully recognized and acknowledged but clearly serious problems with vaccines generally, the whole
go on to the next one. Next issue.
Well, I was talking about different kinds of vaccines, so I'm going to go a little bit out of order here in terms of the articles. And the next article on this subject is an article from Natural News that talks about a stress vaccine.
Good.
In development. The article title says, Stress Vaccines, Big Pharma's Addition to, quote, Brave New World, unquote.
Right.
Curious, if perhaps apt. Phrasing there, but this comes from Stanford University, a medical group that had been working on a stress vaccine. And this, again, is yet, in one sense, another version of let's intervene and improve on the body. Now, I'm not opposed in theory to the idea that maybe there are we're supposedly in some ongoing state of evolution, and is evolution something that improves us, or does it just simply adapt us to a changing world? I mean, I suppose one could, you know, debate those points, but there's sort of a fundamental underlying question with medical interventions generally in terms, at least anyone where you're administering it to a healthy person, such as vaccines. You know, is the human body something that can be improved on? And is the level of complexity something that we have enough of a grasp on that we can do so safely and effectively? Well, history of vaccines says, no, we can't. But we go forward anyway because of the enormous marketing potential for vaccines.
Well, I think it makes a big assumption that that humans actually know how the body works and how the endocrine system works in all its complexity. I think we're still learning. I don't think we know enough that we could go ahead and make a stress protection vaccine, considering every person's stress is different from everybody else's. That's one thing. And doing and injecting a vaccine adds a stress to the body.
Yeah, the vaccine itself any vaccine generally is at one level or another stress. In many instances, quite a severe stress to the body. It's sort of interesting that you would use something that causes stress to prevent stress or treat stress in the same sense that we use, for example, radiation and chemotherapy to treat cancer, and yet those very treatments themselves can cause cancer.
Well, it is a homeopathic concept. You treat the person with the thing that causes a similar that thing that causes the same symptoms. So, therefore...
Well, a potentized chemotherapy remedy would be something very, very different than the chemotherapy itself.
Exactly, because I think, you know, even modern miracle medicine is going toward the minimum dose. They keep going smaller and smaller. Sometimes I feel like one day they're going to step over the line and they're going to end up in homeopathy. It's just going to happen naturally as they find out that every time they put in some kind of crude drug, chemical, or adjuvant, or whatever it is, how much harm it does to the body. They keep saying, well, let's do a little less and less and less. Finally, they'll end up doing homeopathy.
They'll get there despite themselves, yes. But in this particular vaccine for dealing with chronic stress, what they've done is to bioengineer a herpes virus.
Oh, gosh.
And the article says, ostensibly eliminating its dangers while supposedly preserving the virus's inherent neuroprotective genes. So they're artificially meddling, as the article's author says, with the endocrine system, as you mentioned. It's a bioengineered virus. And I think the author has a really good point here. It's going to create a dangerously unpredictable cocktail combined with all the other ingredients that are commonly in vaccines that are toxic. And, of course, the pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine argument about them is that, yes, they're there, but they're in such minute quantities it's not going to hurt anything. And then the counter to that is, well, some of these ingredients are dangerous or toxic in any amount, however minute. And so that battle goes on. But according to this article...
Are they saying to give it to anybody who has stress, somebody who doesn't have herpes?
Well, let me see what they're saying here about the specific application of it. They may be talking about that, and I'm not sure I specifically know if they're talking about that specifically in the article or not, or if it's a more generalized article. And they do talk about the fact that from around 1985 to the present, that there's been an explosion of chronic stress in our modern world. And as our world has become increasingly complex and sophisticated, and with all different kinds of problems and all different levels, health, economics, environmental, and so forth.
Go ahead. I'm going to ask you in a minute to sign out and sign back in because your sound is going bad.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll finish the sentence and do that then. It's certainly believable that stress is an increasingly present problem in our society. So if you'll take it up from there for a little bit, Debbie, I'll call right back in and see if we can improve the sound.
Right. So basically we're dealing with stress. And trying to figure out, I'm going to sign him out there for a moment, how do we deal with stress in our modern society? Do we find it as something like an easy fix, a pill, a vaccine, an antibiotic, or do we have to work at coping, learning how to cope with stress, how to minimize stress, how to reduce stress in our environment and within each of us individually? I've been reading many, many articles about how they're integrating yoga into classrooms and how the kids are really becoming more alert, more involved in the classroom, doing better on their exams, not reducing hyperactivity, all sorts of practices that we have available to us. What if these were instituted as educational programs to deal with stress, and then we reduce the amount of stress that we had in our environment? That could be used as financially funded by the government to get rid of the toxins that are out there and the smoke that's being put out in the exhaust of cars and things like that and manufacturing plants. And there are so many ways that we could go about doing that. Also giving kids time for recess, more recess and less of the pressures of studying for passing an exam. The whole thing came about because of this person who studied in 1978 Robert Sapolsky, who was studying in Kenya about the baboon's behavior, and he extrapolated out about how much stress the hierarchy family of the baboon had and what a difficult time. Of course, they're mammals. They had to deal with stress. And so he says he speculated that chronic stress was an extremely dangerous condition. Well, definitely, chronic stress is dangerous, and you have to break away from that by finding time for yourself. Even if you're sitting at a computer all day like I do, I need to get up every hour and walk around, move my body, become attuned to what I'm feeling within myself. And these are things that people just have to learn, basic habits. He said that people are as vulnerable to the effects of stress as the lowest ranking male apes. While stress doesn't cause any single disease, in fact, the causal link between stress and ulcers has been largely disproved. He says, it makes most diseases worse. So the list of ailments connected to stress is staggering. As a matter of fact, most physicians will say all disease is linked to stress, no matter what kind of pains you have, sufferings you have, illnesses and disease. We can look for some etiology and beginning with a kind of stress, whether it triggered something in your body, a gene that went on like a light, like a positive and negative, or something else. We're still waiting for Alan to get back on the line here.
Yep, I'm here with you, I think.
You are? Wow, I'm going to have to refresh my page because it doesn't look like you're here. Okay.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I didn't know you were there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's good. So I was just talking about the stress factor, and, you know, I have my own theory. We all need stress. We need to learn how to deal with it, cope with it. That's what helps to build our immune system. And we will also learn that when plants are placed in conditions that don't have stress, they produce the most gorgeous, beautiful, perfect fruits and flowers. Yet the active ingredients that we need, that we would then imbibe, we would eat and become part of our own system, is lessened. We don't have the active ingredient factors in those plants that have not been stressed by some kind of insect or mold or weather condition. And size.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a moment, and not to put you on the spot, but to get to an underlying issue that hopefully you didn't already discuss while I was calling back in. But let's say, just for the sake of conversation here, and the point that a stress vaccine comes out that is a reasonably safe vaccine, why spend all that time doing yoga and whatever else? You just get a shot and then go about your day.
Because it's not going to work. And give me a definition of stress. Is it targeting?
Okay, so for purposes of my point, just assume that, you know, somebody is stressed out, they take the vaccine, and it reduces their stress. Let's say it's successful. Why not use – now, these are huge
– you still haven't defined stress. What is it?
Okay, but I don't want to argue with you, and I think you're not hearing me. Let's assume has a stressed-out life, they take the vaccine, and they're not as stressed out. Let's say it works.
Okay,
let's
cool.
Let's say they don't die from some adverse event from the vaccine. Now, you know, these are huge ifs, but my point is that there's another underlying issue here. It's the mentality of take a pill and be done with it sort of thing, where you're putting the Band-Aid and not dealing with the underlying problem. Why would it be better in terms of dealing with stress to develop and take the time to do, and I'm a big fan of yoga, have practiced it, intermittently, I wish I could say regularly, but it certainly at least intermittently for many, many years. I think it's a great way for people to harmonize and balance their systems, or a great part of a larger strategy for doing that. But I can see somebody saying, in the same way that, you know, oh, you're sick, you go pop a pill, go to the doctor, pop a pill, take care of it, and you're done. And if it seems to work, why not do that? And I think the point I'm trying to get to here is the Band-Aid mentality, which doesn't really address the underlying issue. If you sort of artificially intervene with the body, stress, when we experience stress, that's the human system trying to correct a problem. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think the fundamental philosophy, or a fundamental philosophy in homeopathy, is that symptoms are not something to be suppressed or to be treated necessarily in and of themselves, unless they're very severe symptoms, but rather recognize them as an indication of the body's attempt to heal or balance itself, and you actually work with the body. Sometimes with homeopathy, as you well know, Debbie, the symptoms might even be temporarily exacerbated in the process of the body completing its healing cycle. And so, for example, there are studies that show if you intervene with antibiotics, the sooner you intervene with antibiotics for children's ear infections, the higher the recurrence rate. That's an intervention that stops or cuts the body's attempt to heal itself. And if you allow the body to complete that process, then it's stronger as a result and has fewer or maybe even no subsequent ear infections. What are the possible adverse events or consequences of intervening with the body's system to sort of shortcut stress? And I didn't mean to at all to invalidate your question. Stress is an enormously comprehensive term, and you can talk about mental stress, psychological stress, emotional stress, physical stress, various combinations of all of those. And your question was a absolutely valid and inherently complex one. I just wanted to take us in a little different direction for a couple of minutes here. If we ignore what the stress we're experiencing is telling us, if we intervene and do something, even if successfully intervene, and I question whether that's possible or practical with a vaccine, but assuming one did successfully intervene and stress was relieved as a result, is that potentially putting a mask over a problem that's going to become worse and more severe at a later date? I mean, I know, for example, there's a condition called atypical measles that we see in vaccinated children, and at least one theory or explanation of this is that the vaccine actually suppresses the acute manifestation of a measles rash, and the person not experiencing that thinks then, oh, I didn't get measles, I'm not sick, the vaccine worked. And yet what happens is it actually pushes the disease inward, and it manifests in a more severe form called atypical measles, which is more of a chronic condition than an acute infectious condition as typical measles is. And so you may, in using a measles vaccine, actually set yourself up for a more severe form of measles later on that's much more dangerous. You know, might something similar be happening or analogous be happening with a stress vaccine? And I'm not necessarily asking you to answer that, Debbie, as I am just sort of posing the rhetorical question.
Sounds good to me, Alan. Take me on a different path. It's good. I have a response for you. One, yes, if they're using the herpes virus, we have no idea whether they're going to break out in shingles, whether they're going to have some other repercussions on the physical level. The whole point is what you're asking. It's the way that we think about the human body as not being just a physical being. We are a spiritual being. We have much more to do. If you were born into this world, you have a mission. You have challenges. You have to overcome obstacles. You're here to build relationships. You're here to whatever you as an individual need to do to express yourself. Your soul is here for a reason. And if you have an illness or stress, that's your challenge. We don't want to take away your challenge, because then once you don't have to deal with those stresses, you're not going to feel the accomplishment, your self-worth, your value, if you take away your human being, your mission, and the conditions. And if, let's say, if you take away these stresses, how will you feel about other people? How will you feel about their human condition? Will you have compassion? Will, you know, we don't know on the emotional mental plane what these types of vaccines will do also. So I think that homeopathy is a completely different way of viewing the human condition, medicine, drugs, application of medicine. And those are things, questions, those ethical questions are not being asked by the people who are developing, well, let's just fix this. And they're not able to, really, because God's going to find another way for you to have a different kind of stress.
Well, it certainly suggests for those who lean more than in the direction of so-called conspiracy theories in terms of their philosophy. And when I say conspiracy theories, I do not use that phrase in the same way that the mainstream press does, which is to immediately dismiss whatever follows. Because many of the so-called conspiracy theories have proven to be conspiracy facts. For those who are maybe cynical, it's a better word to use here, a stress vaccine could certainly be a concern about them could include, oh, this is a way to sort of pacify the masses. Let's just give everybody a chronic stress vaccine, and then they won't stress about anything. Well, that could lead to, who knows, widespread complacency, apathy.
Right.
Inability to effectively respond to serious situations. And maybe great if what you want is to be a dictator of a nation of zombies, but otherwise, for those of us who wouldn't the would-be zombies, it certainly doesn't sound very appealing. Doesn't even sound appealing to me as a hypothetical dictator of such a crowd. But there's a real interesting quote at the end of this article. I'd love to read this because I think it's very interesting, and we'll push on to the next article. It says that Aldous Huxley once argued by mail with George Orwell over their visions of futuristic world government tyranny. Speaking of conspiracy theories, Huxley posited a pharmaceutically conditioned population easily controlled with minimal force. While Orwell saw mind control and force as the controlling factors, the author ends his article with the short sentence, "Unfortunately, they were both right." So I'll leave you with that thought as we...
Can you repeat it for me one more time?
Okay. Aldous Huxley argued by mail with George Orwell over their vision of futuristic world government tyranny. Huxley posited a pharmaceutically conditioned population, such as, you know, one given all these, everyone's given a chronic stress vaccine, a pharmaceutically conditioned population easily controlled with minimal force.
Yeah.
While Orwell saw mind control and force as the controlling factors. And the author of this article says, unfortunately, they were both right. Well, we do see certain elements of that. We see laws being passed, unconstitutional laws being passed, restricting people's basic fundamental liberties. We see that at the state and federal level. We've talked about that on this show in recent shows. We'll certainly be talking about it again in future shows. And, you know, that's one level of a control and force. We see that there is, as you and I discussed very briefly just prior to the show today, Debbie, that there's tremendous censorship in our own so-called free press. A lot of information is kept from us, and so there certainly is an element of mind control right there, just in the information that at least the mainstream news is allowed to share or not share.
Isn't mind control force, an imposition on an individual, and the only way that they, I mean, it's, you know, the propaganda, the blanking out of information, what is that called? They're, you know, we're not getting the truth, and they're trying to control what we think. I consider that force also.
Yeah, well, I think what they meant here, and who knows for sure, but when he says mind control and force, I think probably what they imply, to me, what they imply there, I mean, mind control and physical force as distinct from mind control. But sure, sure. I mean, all of these approaches are types of force or control, and we see them happening increasingly in our society. This is a very interesting and in many ways disturbing time that we live in, and it's going to be very... interesting. There's far better words than the word interesting, I suppose, but to see how things play out over the next several months and years, because there is a huge polarization between forces that are trying to increasingly control citizens individually and collectively, increasingly limit our ability individually to make choices and exercise choices. I mean, when you have things like the FDA sending armed troops, armed members of the FDA, to deal with something as benign as somebody selling raw milk. You know, if it's illegal, you send someone out to talk to them about that. You don't send in a bunch of guys with guns, but that's what they have done. I mean, we are, I don't know what else to call that than a police state. It's not. It's such overkill for the issue, and it's terrorism. It's a fear tactic. It's a way to scare the pants off of anybody to dare do anything that...
There is nothing to fear but fear itself. I'm thinking...
Well,
I'm thinking
I fear that, you know, if somebody shows up to my door with guns and says, you know, where'd you get the raw milk? I'm going to have a real hard time, you know, dealing with that. Now, I don't happen to keep milk in my house, actually, very often, so that particular one isn't gonna affect me, but I think it ludicrous that anybody should be prevented from selling or buying raw milk if that's what they want to do, and there are certainly a lot of people who claim health benefits from doing that, and plenty of evidence to suggest that the regular milk you get in the store, homogenized and pasteurized, and is potentially harmful. So,
which it is.
yeah. I don't want to get off on a tangent here.
Okay.
Let's reel it back
into
the vaccine. So
let's go ahead to the next issue.
Well, the next one I want to get into again, in keeping with the theme we started with here about new vaccines. This has got to be, you know, the smoking one was pretty interesting, but this has got to be the most bizarre vaccine idea that I've heard of yet. This comes from a website, Gaia Health, G-A-I-A. And
that's Heidi Stevenson, a good friend, and on Homeopathy World Community. She's a homeopath.
Oh, awesome. Heidi has been outspoken in the vaccine community as well for years. She does an excellent job of bringing information to the public. We love her dearly. Glad to hear she's a homeopath. I wasn't specifically aware of that. So she tells us here in this article, new pig vaccine to prevent cooking odor by creating autoimmune disease. Boy, just the title is so loaded with, so dense with topics for discussion, and we haven't even gotten to the article. So it turns out that... male pig meat has an odor that's offensive to most people. And so what they do in the industry is to castrate the male pigs. According to this article, it's something that they don't usually do with anesthetics. So there's a whole separate question about cruelty to animals here that we won't get into for lack of time and being a little off topic. But it's sort of just really bizarre to begin with. And this vaccine is designed to create an autoimmune disease. It's almost like an implicit admission about vaccines and autoimmune disease generally. You know, it's sort of like if you want to create an autoimmune disease for some reason in an animal, what would be the best way to do it? Well, first thing that comes to my mind is, well, get a vaccine. They're really good at that. And so that's what they're doing here. But the autoimmune disease is intended and designed to prevent the male pigs from maturing, and therefore you don't have this later meat odor problem. But it's just so ironic that let's see if we can get a vaccine to create an autoimmune disease. Well, I bet that was pretty easy.
I imagine they can consider castrating animals a typical procedure that they do. In the Humane Society, they do that typically so that we don't overpopulate the world with dogs and cats. So that isn't an issue for them. And right? So, I mean, that's overcome. The concept that it's just the smell, we want to get rid of the smell. I mean, to make it more palatable. Maybe it smells bad to humans for a reason. Maybe God says, I keep talking about the Creator, but why do we have our smell glands? Why is it that animals go out in the wilderness and they live in a way that they use their senses to determine whether something is toxic or not toxic for them? Is this plant going to be something I want to eat or not? Is this, so why would we be messing up our own personal system?
I see this over and over again in my practice, Debbie. I work, as you know, primarily with religious-based exemptions and waivers to vaccines. And a common theme, I see many, many different variations, but a common theme is that people talk about not interfering with God's plan. And what's interesting to me on a, I guess, more philosophical level is I think that concept is perfectly valid whether it's in the religious sense of the idea, or whether even if you're a complete atheist and you're just talking about evolution in sort of a clinical scientific sense, we have either approach, I guess, is my point here. My argument, if that's what you want to call it here, is that either approach gets you potentially to the same place in the sense of, or in terms of, we have something that is incredibly well designed, the human body, immensely complex, many different parts and systems that interact in ways that I suspect we are only scratching the surface of in terms of our understanding scientifically. And a little humility here, I think, would take us a long way, rather than to just sort of assume that it's an inferior design and product and let's find out how we can improve on it. I think we should be spending a little more time and be a little more humble about this and be approaching it from the point of view of seeking to better understand it. And as we keep talking about working with it. There's a wonderful analogy that someone told me years ago about the allopathic approach to healthcare. If your body was a car and the oil light came on, if you take your body car to an allopathic doctor mechanic, their approach to fixing that is to unplug the light. So that light on anymore,
yeah.
As opposed to
I guess
fixing the oil leak, but
right, we're removing our response system. Instead, we're not taking note of what the message is that it's trying to send us, as opposed to just like ignoring it or suppressing it or saying, let's just tweak this part of your body and remove that pain. Instead of finding out what is the underlying cause of the reason that this pain keeps coming back to you.
There are people who have the attitude of, these crazy religious idiots who have these bizarre beliefs that are going to get everybody sick and killed. They object to vaccines. And, it's easy for some, I think, intellectual atheist types to just sort of categorically dismiss anything that falls under religious belief. That's just some sort of primitive thing that we really should have outgrown a long time ago and every intelligent person already has, that kind of mentality. What we find the further we go and the deeper we look is that the design that we've been given is just exquisite. and we see better health results by respecting the human body and its complete and intricate design than we do by trying to improve on it. So the mentality that says those who, you know, put their faith in God instead of man's vaccines, for example, the mentality that says, oh, that's a bunch of wackos, they've really got it backwards. And I was probably one of those people some years ago. I come from a non-religious background, but I have become increasingly spiritual as I've gotten older, because I just see greater and greater, among other things, I see greater and greater respect for the complexity and exquisiteness of the design of the human body that we've been given. We need to spend more time seeking to understand it and learning how to work with it. And those approaches generally have better effects, the holistic approaches, homeopathy, and other holistic approaches.
Well, I would like, because you touched upon this, how can people become active since we're spreading this news, giving them information, creating awareness? What can a person actually do? Can they attend one of your lectures? What do you have going for people?
Well, there are potentially a long list of things, but for me they fall into two very general categories. And one is the necessary prerequisite to inform yourself, stay abreast of information. But there's a certain point at which, in my own educational process, where I had enough pieces of the puzzle that I could put together a clear picture, and I knew that I didn't want to be vaccinated anymore and didn't want my kids to be vaccinated. And then... and so I keep up with the education process, but I took on a different focus. In fact, that's what inspired me to go back to school and to pick law school. I went back to law school after 17 years and picked law school because of my concern about vaccines. And as far as I know, I'm the only attorney with the level of focus and attention to vaccine exemptions and waivers and vaccine legislative activism, the only attorney in the country really doing that at the level that I'm doing it. So I see a niche that I'm trying to fill. But, you know, educate yourself and continue that process. Second step, learn about your rights, especially if you are in a situation where you may be now or in the near future confronting some kind of vaccine mandate. And a footnote on that point. Most of us as adults feel like, well, thank God we're past that. You know, kids have to worry about it for school, but I'm an adult. Newsflash, the CDC has in mind to revaccinate all adults. There is no, the agenda there is to add vaccines for everyone, whether you're getting none now or one or more now, to continually add more and more vaccines to the required list and to the recommended list, and there just is no light at the end of that tunnel. So if you don't have a pressing need, that's great. Move on to the next step. If you do have a pressing need, you, of course, want to address that first. But then the final step, or not final step, but a major next step, is to become legislatively active, because the starting place, often not the end of the analysis, but the starting place most of the time is, what do the laws say? If someone tells you you have to get a vaccine, and if it's required by law, then you're out of luck. Or with employers, a lot of times it's company policy, so it's not really a law in the formal sense of the word. But what we can or can't do, the choices we have or don't have to refuse vaccines when they're required, either by law or by an employer, have to do with what does the law say? Is there a law that says you can refuse in this situation and you don't have to explain it and nobody can punish you for your refusal? Well, there are very few situations where it's that straightforward and easy to do. And the pharmaceutical industry and lobbyists are pushing to make it increasingly harder for people to refuse vaccines by passing laws that make it harder. And so we need to do two things. We need to become legislatively active. We need to do that to oppose bad bills or bad laws, and we need to do it to push for and support bills and laws that would give us more freedom of choice. This is not a situation where we can afford to say, well, I really don't have the time for that. And it's not my job to tell anybody specifically what they should do or not do. We all have to decide that for ourselves. But if we don't become active in whatever way works for us, we're going to watch our rights dwindle and disappear, and we're going to watch vaccine mandates increase, not just for kids in school, but for everybody who works for an employer, for everyone, of course, in the military already. Immigrants have to get vaccines. There's just a long list of different situations and a lot of new ones being added. You know, a couple of years ago, Debbie, flu vaccines were recommended for doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers, but not required. But since the fake pandemic, there's been this wave sweeping the country where all healthcare employees, or virtually all, more and more of them, are being required, get the shot or lose your job. And we don't care if you have religious objections or a medical condition. And I hear this over and over from my clients. So it's a very aggressive agenda that's playing out on multiple levels.
Okay. I was typing away the coverage of what you were saying and listing those things. And where can people go to become legislatively active? I mean, is it enough for me to sign a petition and pass it to friends? Is it enough for me to write a blog or an editorial or a comment on a post? Is that enough for me to do, or is there something else?
Well, the National Vaccine Information Center has created what they call their advocacy portal on the web. It's nvicadvocacy.org. All those letters run together. I don't believe there's any dashes or anything in there. nvicadvocacy.org. That's a website that you can sign up on for free and monitor the state legislation pertaining to vaccines all over the country, but of course most particularly in whatever your state is. I highly recommend that people join that. People can get on the Pandemic Response Project mailing list if they want. I don't send out emails very often, but talk about things legislatively and other information from time to time there. There is power as an individual, but this is an issue where we're up against a powerful and well-financed pharmaceutical lobby, so we really do need to find ways to organize, network, and work in groups. I think the NVIC advocacy portal is one of, if not perhaps the best way to do that for vaccines. And it doesn't take a lot of time to participate in that way, so that's something that just about anybody who has access to the Internet can do. But other people may want to become more active with specific issues. I work with activists all around the country. If someone has a legislative project that they'd like my help with, I'd be glad to help.
Right. So you're available for speaking engagements. No matter what group you're involved with, you know, the folks who are listening, whether you're in the medical world or health world or with educators, whoever you're with, Alan, you're available to do speaking.
Debbie, I've done everything from talk to five mothers in somebody's living room to international conferences, but I don't do enough of those. There's a lot of information to get out, and I'd like the help and support of any of you listeners with getting out more. If you have a group or know of a group interested in any aspect of the vaccine rights issue, exemptions and waivers, or the vaccine police state that we're moving towards, and what can we do legislatively and so forth, any of those topics or subtopics, do get a hold of me at attorney@vaccinerights.com. Just go to the vaccinerights.com website, and my contact information is there. Thank you, Debbie.
Okay, so let's talk about when one less becomes one more.
Boy, this one is so disturbing. This concerns the HPV vaccine, and in just real quick summary of what this article covers, they are finding that in HPV-vaccinated groups, that they see an increase in abnormal pap smears, cervical dysplasia, and cervical cancer. And the article here says abnormal pap smears, cervical dysplasia, and cervical cancer spike post-HPV vaccination. I hear different versions of this with different vaccines, that there are studies that show that vaccines have sometimes exact opposite effect of what they're intended. And one of the points, this are one of many pithy points that this article gets into. They're saying, well, even if the vaccine effectively suppresses a couple variations of the or strains of the HPV vaccine, virus, nature doesn't like a vacuum. It's going to fill a vacuum with something else. And what's it going to fill that with? And is that going to be even more dangerous than the strains they know or believe may be associated with cancer in the first place? I saw an article recently about a study showing the hepatitis B vaccine can damage the liver. Well, that's sort of the whole point of preventing hepatitis B, is to save your liver, you know, or primary point. What is it when vaccines seem to be counterproductive? And then, of course, you know, along with that or underneath that is all of the control or miscontrol of information to prevent the adverse effects or, in some cases, outright counterproductive consequences of vaccines from seeing the light of day. But
the people who are constantly and consistently developing more vaccines, that's their thinking. You know, if you love to use a knife, you're going to become a surgeon. I mean, that could be a good thing to help people survive. If you work with DNA and genetic development, you're going to look for a way to use your expertise for healing, supposedly. So to create vaccines, this is the mindset of the people developing them, where they are not carefully hearing the other side of the story, with literally how many the adverse reporting system, VAERS, shows there have been 26,050 reports of adverse events, including 849 reports from boys and men ages 9 to 26 post-HPV vaccination. Now, they have been pushing this on not only the women, but the men. So it makes no sense.
Well, when you look at it from a profit point of view, of course, it all falls neatly into place, at least as long as you only look at that and don't look at all the other things that we try to, you know, discuss on the show here, and that others, of course, are trying to bring attention to. But, you know, every man, woman, and the child on the planet is a potential recipient of vaccines from the moment of birth and until, I don't know, maybe there's a vaccine you can give somebody after they die so that they'll cremate better or something. Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, where they're going now with all the different kinds of vaccines, surely they won't let death be the end of it. But in any case, throughout our entire lifetime, of course, we're all potential ongoing vaccine recipients. That's an enormous market. There's, what, 6 or 7 billion of us now, and that number doesn't show any signs of diminishing soon. If anything, it'll keep going. So there is profound financial incentive, even if you disregard completely all of the other questions or issues or concerns about potential deliberate intervention with fertility or population control kinds of agendas that I used to laugh at, frankly, but over more recent months and years have been gradually taking more seriously, just because I see more and more in evidence supporting those concerns. But you don't have to go any farther than the follow the money to see serious problems.
I can see how people could really have a true belief in this system, they say, we are going to save the world by using these vaccines. And they could really believe it. Unfortunately, what I'm saying is part of their brain function is blacking out the negative aspects. They just continue to pursue it simply because they have this incredible belief in it that it's going to work one day. And let's keep, you know, once you grab onto something and you think you can overcome the obstacles of that thing, well, they need that stress vaccine for those guys.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Debbie, I hear what you're saying, but don't worry about it, because I think there's probably somebody developing a vaccine to take care of that. So,
yeah, well, it's just so unethical, and they're just casting this blind eye to it. Okay, let's do the next thing.
Okay, and then I know we're running out of time here and need to wrap up soon, but boy, there's always so much more to talk about than there is time to talk about it. You know, I'll skip to an article here that's talking about a new vaccine technology. This is something from Mercola.com, Dr. Joe Mercola. Coming soon, new technology to help persuade you to vaccinate. And this has to do with drugs that can be administered via a high-pressured jet. And the real short story here, and I encourage folks to read the article to get the bigger picture, but the real short story here is that there's a belief that one of the part of the resistance to vaccination is just the pain of having a needle stuck in your arm. I can remember being terrified of getting a vaccine. I never wanted to go to the doctor when I was a kid because I was so afraid I was going to get another shot.
Oh, is this the kind of shot that they give on Star Trek? They just go shh, and it goes in through the skin like that?
This might be one of many examples we could probably ultimately cite of science fiction foreshadowing science reality.
Okay.
But yes, this is wow. In this article, it says every year Americans receive 16 billion injections of various medications and vaccines. So this is something that could hypothetically...
It's scary because I don't know who's going to do it, and, you know, without my permission.
Well, you're right. If someone just has to, you know, put something against you and pull the trigger and it takes, a split second to do it, boy, you could have that happen a lot without people even realizing what had gone on, or certainly not without advance notice, but...
Well, with nanotechnology, is this working via nanotechnology? Let's see. Tiny high-pressurized jet eliminates needles and delivers drugs directly into the skin, traveling at 340 meters per second. It works the same way as a mosquito's proboscis. Oh, my goodness gracious. They can deliver drugs through both the retina in the eye and the middle and inner ear. So kind of like when you go to the doctor and they now take your temperature by putting a probe in your ear. They're working on a similar device that takes powdered drugs and makes them liquid-like when they're injected into the skin. It's frightening.
It's for me, it's sort of a mixture of fascinating and frightening. Apparently, according to this article, that there were different kinds of needle-free injection technologies as far back as the 1800s, but certain ones of these devices were eventually banned. It's just the newer systems are smaller. They could be available for personal use, you know, if people who are
maybe they're using it. Yeah, I was just saying, people who need insulin, you think that they're using this already?
Yeah, I don't know, but... they're saying that the needle fears are often cited as a primary reason for non-compliance with vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And I'm not at all surprised at the idea that, again, just because I can validate it from my own personal experience as a child, kids do not like getting shots. They're not fun. And kids can't really relate, especially young children, can't really appreciate or relate to the presumed benefit of doing so. It's like, you know, when you're a child, if it feels good, it's fine. If it doesn't, it's not okay. And who cares what the explanation behind it is? So it takes an older child, a more mature person, to appreciate that it's a small sacrifice for a greater good, assuming, of course, that's the case, and we argue quite the opposite with vaccines. But interesting development, bottom line here. Needleless technology.
Yeah. June was a very active month for the vaccine issues, whether it is for pharmaceutical companies being sued or falsifying information or recalls, whole bunches of things, learning about potential hazards, false positive results. No matter what it is, there's something going on in the vaccine world, and that's why you have to become educated simply so that you know what to do, or you're educated so you can educate your doctor when you go in.
Well, one way that people can keep up with many of the ongoing vaccine issues as they play out is to go visit the PandemicResponseProject.com's news page a couple times a week, and sometimes you can learn a lot just skimming the article titles. You get the gist of what's going on, but other times you'll surely want to click on the link and read more detail about the article. So I encourage people to include that as one way that they keep abreast of what goes on in the arena.
Very, very good. I mean, we could talk about all of this stuff. It's ongoing. You have this month alone, there's got to be 20 different, at least 20 articles about vaccines becoming so politicized, not only in our country, but I see the Taliban is going to ban polio vaccines for children until the U.S. stops drone strikes. So using it, this is really big news. I mean,
why don't we just stop both, and then everybody will be better off.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, there was that other one, and I don't know whether we had ever mentioned it on our talks previously about the batched vaccines, the ones that the doctor puts the syringe in and takes out a new injection for a new patient, and it might have up to 10 of them in a batch, and they say, warning, if you happen to be near the bottom of that batch, that can be easily contaminated and not really be healthy or effective. So ask if you've decided to take your vaccine, what number am I in this particular batch of injection?
Yeah, there are single-dose vials and then the multi-dose vials. You're talking about a multi-dose vial there. And it was a real interesting article by Sandy Luno, who's a pharmacist in Norway, also a member of the Pandemic Response Project Professional Panel, I'm proud to say, and wrote just a really interesting and detailed article about these very issues, Debbie. Apparently, and I think the multi-dose vials do like up to 10. And the if the vial is not shaken in order to keep all of the ingredients equally mixed, the person who gets that 10th shot, that last shot from any given vial, may be getting a much heavier dose of mercury, for example, in their shot than the previous people from the same vial. It's just, and of course, each time you push a syringe in, you potentially get particles of the rubber stopper getting into the liquid as well. And so you're going to have the highest exposure of that if you're the last one who gets a shot out of that vial as well. So there were a couple of serious issues there, potential serious issues, above and beyond just the issues that are present with any vaccine. So and she found that the FDA had not done any kind of studies at all to see what was going on with the stopper material, the rubber or whatever it was, that when you think about it, you know, you're going to be pushing a needle through that 10 times to give 10 doses, and each time you do that, you may be pushing particles into the vaccine liquid that you then mm-hmm. inject to somebody. So it's fascinating and disturbing stuff.
Well, let's end with this major news. Vaccinated children have up to 500% more disease than unvaccinated. This is one on Natural News by P.F. Lewis, who says they show that vaccinated children have 2 to 5 times more childhood diseases, illnesses, and allergies than their unvaccinated counterpart children. And this is an ongoing study in a German National Health Survey conducted by KIGGS involving over 17,000 children up to age 19. So that's one to ponder. Do you want to have allergies? Do you want to have the disease? I mean, people who get the vaccine also get can also get the disease. So,
yeah, those, of course, are statistically relevant numbers of people, although I believe that that one, if I understand, is still ongoing. You know, anyone could still sign up and contribute their information. I don't know that it reaches the level of peer review study in terms of its credibility, but it certainly raises very, very serious questions. And we're not seeing any formal peer review studies being done on this for the simple reason that they don't want to do those studies because they know that the results are going to be counterproductive to their vaccine marketing goals. So there has been and continues to be and will continue to be until we change the system, concerted efforts to prevent the creation of any evidence that would go against vaccines and the suppression of any evidence that manages to slip out despite the attempts to suppress it all or to prevent it from being found in the first place. So, but there are studies. Just last year, there were 3 different studies, peer review published studies, showing connections with vaccines and autism. It's just not. The CDC has a bold-faced lie on its website. They don't say, which they probably could, potentially could say validly, they could say there's no studies proving that vaccines cause autism. That might be true. There might be people who would argue with that. But what they say is something much more broad in their language, like there are no studies showing any connection whatsoever between vaccines and autism. Now, I may be paraphrasing, but that's the gist of their written statement, their position. And it's just not true. There was a study showing that for every 1% increase in vaccine coverage, there are 680 more cases of autism. There was a study showing that concluded that the aluminum in vaccines may have a causal relationship to autism. There was another study that was a review of the autism literature by a former senior pharmaceutical research scientist, and she concluded that the encephalitis following vaccination is one of the causes of autism. So the CDC is just flat out selling pharmaceutical products and vaccines. They are not there for the benefit of the American public as they are supposed to be. Very, very serious problems with our federal agencies. They have been taken over by industries and in and out of healthcare, but clearly by the pharmaceutical industry as with regard to those agencies that concern healthcare. And the system is severely broken. We need to fix that system. Dr. Gary Null just very recently released a wonderful documentary where he documents the deep and serious corruption and problems in the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. I highly recommend that people go to Gary Null's website, Null, N-U-L-L, and follow the links and watch that documentary. It is very informative and insightful. And he makes the case very convincingly that the FDA is broken beyond repair. It needs to be completely dismantled and then something else rebuilt in its place because it is so deeply flawed, so deeply controlled. There are people who work for the FDA and then go work for industry and then come back and work for the FDA. That's just a revolving door where people in some cases go back and forth. There just is no independence with the FDA. FDA scientists who make recommendations based on their research have managers say, I don't care what your research shows, we're doing something different. It's not that the people in the FDA are problematic in a collective sense. It's that the small number of people who are in decision-making positions are there to serve the special interests of the pharmaceutical industry. And efforts are continually underway to prevent whistleblowing and to punish whistleblowers, people from speaking out on the inside. It's a really horrific situation.
Okay, well, Victor has put that image of the Monsanto positions and the federal positions of a long list of individuals. So that is there for people who want to look at it. And I'm sure it's probably going on in more than just one company. This has been a really power-packed show with you today, Alan. We've learned so much and discussed many, many topics. Want to say we will be back next Thursday at noon. And we also have a show coming up on Monday at 11. We're going to be talking with John Board, who is also on Homeopathy World Community. He is a film producer, an award-winning film producer, who has just gotten a grant to create a little short film about his life and his journey toward health and bee sting therapy, apitherapy, and he also used many other adjunct remedies like homeopathy. So it's going to be a great talk with him on Monday at 11 Eastern Time. And on Wednesday morning, we will have Dr. Adil Chimthalawala-Kasim back, MD cardiologist, answering all your questions about health and your heart, whatever you want to know. And the last show was unbelievable. Five people had asked him questions, and we spent the whole time talking about them, learning about also about side effects of drugs and whether you can do homeopathy and drugs at the same time, and a lot about mother tinctures and stories about how he saved a life when he didn't have anything at his disposal and he was lost in the jungle. So, I mean, we really have a great time, and I encourage people to get on. That's Wednesday at 11:30 Eastern Time. And I've reduced the number of regular shows during the summer. We're kind of winding down a little bit. And so you can listen to the archives, the shows that we've produced in the past with Grant Bentley and Facial Analysis and Christina Chambreau and Pet Health. So thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Debbie. It's amazing work you're doing. Keep it up.
Okay, we'll keep partnering together with this and informing the public.
Will do. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Allow our souls to shine, reaching for the great new love and hearing for man. George.